The Shanachie, Tales of Old Seamus by Jerry McCulloch.
The Parish Outing. It was a blazing hot summer's day in a small town of Ardnakill in Donegal, and I felt far too hot and lazy to do anything. After all, I was on holiday, escaping from town life, and taking a well-earned rest in a peaceful little cottage set among the beautiful hills of Donegal that I'd been visiting regularly since I lived there in my childhood. I decided to take a short stroll in the shade of the leafy trees along the river bank, and there I found my old friend Seamus O'Hare, taking his ease in a patch of shadow beneath a full-leaved chestnut tree. I threw myself down beside him and stretched out luxuriously, and for a few minutes neither of us spoke. The sound of the river bubbling along contentedly beside us was refreshment to the spirit. Not far off, a bright kingfisher hung poised above the cool waters, ready to dive on its prey. A flash of blue told me he had plunged down. "What a day," said Seamus at last. "We don't get many of them. Just the day that would be perfect for the parish outing next week. But there, it may well be pouring by then." He chuckled mischievously. "Parish outing?" I inquired lazily. "What would that be, Seamus?" "Don't tell me you've never been on a parish outing, Jerry?" asked Seamus in surprise. "And you that's been coming to Ardnakill since you were the size of sixpence. Well, well." "I must have missed them all," I said. "Tell me more." "Many a thing happens on those parish outings," said Seamus, smiling reminiscently. "I could tell you some stories." "Go on then," I said. It was enough. "Well now," said Seamus, leaning back in the soft, fresh green grass and chewing at a piece of grass as he spoke. "What can I tell you?" "I remember the time," he said, "when there was hardly a soul in the town didn't go on the outings. It didn't matter what the outing was for, the parish school, or the choir, or even the women's meeting. The whole clatter of us went, and not just the children like now. It was a good opportunity for a fella to get a bit more friendly with a girl he might have had his eye on for a while. There was young Paddy Riley now. It was in the parish outing that he got off with old Maggie Brennan's girl, Aisling. He'd been hovering about for weeks before like a demented hen, trying to get up the nerve. And that was the day he finally did the trick. But mind you, I don't think he'd have got anywhere with her if it hadn't been for Una Laverty's new short skirt. It was one of those short skirts that was just coming into fashion about then, and Una was the first of the young girls to make an appearance in one. The fellas were struck all of a heap, and the rest of the girls were raging at Una for beating him to the draw, as you might say. As for all the old hens, they were saying Una was a disgrace going round with a skirt as short as that. But mind you, they weren't saying it in front of big Annie Laverty, Una's ma. Annie was queening it round as pleased as punch with all the attention her wee Una was getting. Well, as I said, the girls were right and annoyed at Una, and none of them more so than Aisling Brennan, who was used to being a bit before the rest of them when it came to fashion, for her mammy served behind a counter and W.J. Burns, the big drapers in Donegal town, and she kept Aisling well up to date with all the latest styles. So dear, didn't Aisling take it into her head to do something about it? Well, the bus from McFarlane's had been hired for the day, and it was sitting waiting, and up we all got. It was to take us away along the coast to where there was a nice bit of beach for the kids to do their running about, and a hall was organised for us to have our tea, or in case it would rain. When we were all stowed in our seats, Father Donegan went the rounds giving everybody their paper bag with a bun and two sandwiches and a bit of cake, and warning the children that if they ate it now, there wouldn't be any more to have with their lemonade when we got to the hall. "Dear save us, man, will you have a titter o' wit?" old Sidi Rafferty called out to him. She never cared what she said to anyone, priest or not. "Sure, you know fine the kids'll have it scoffed before the bus gets started." But Father Donegan paid no attention to her, that being the sort of him, though any creature with all her marbles could have told him she was right. It was a great trip, with everybody bantering everybody else and having a good laugh. Then we came to a bend in the road and drove round it, and there was the sea, fresh and blue and sparkling, and enough to lift your heart out of your body. A day to make you forget everything and just jump for joy. By the time we got down to the beach, Ona Laverty's skirt was forgotten about by everyone but Aisling. What she was up to none of us rightly knew, but she disappeared away behind some bushes, and when she came out you'd have sworn she'd got herself dressed up in a short skirt just like Una's. It was only when you looked at her twice that you could see where she'd hitched her dress up some way, so it would look like one. And mind you, it was well for Aisling and her ma hadn't been able to get off from the shop to come, for if she'd seen Aisling showing her legs to all and sundry that way, she'd have had to skin off her when she got her home. It had been only the Sunday before that Father Donegan had been preaching against the same short skirts at Mass, and Maggie Brennan, not being like Annie Laverty, was always a great one for doing what the priest said. Paddy Riley couldn't take his eyes off Aisling, and he wasn't the only one, for Aisling was always a right nice-looking young girl. Young Donald Neely and Liam O'Connell were making up to her rightly, and I felt very sorry for poor Paddy, for he didn't seem to be able to get next or near Aisling at the start of it. The sun was out and shining, and youngsters were running along the beach and climbing the rocks. Father Donegan had his work cut out for him, getting them lined up for the racing. All most of them wanted was to get their mammies to roll up their trousers for them if they were boys, or to tuck up their frocks into their knickers if they were girls, so they could go careering off down the beach and into the water for what they called a paddle, though with the splashing and shrieking that went on, it was more like a bear garden than anything else. Before too long, Father Donegan had enough sense to give it up as a bad job, and he came and threw himself down beside me on the sand where I was getting my own trousers rolled up. "It's enough to fair sicken you, Seamus," he started, "after all the work I put into this, getting the spuds for the egg and spoon races and all." But I wasn't for listening to Father Donegan moaning much longer. "Sure, Father, it would do your heart good to see the children enjoying themselves on a nice day like this, and the bigger ones too, for by." I was looking round for young Aisling Brennan while I was speaking, and it was then I caught on she wasn't anywhere in sight. Well, there was nothing to that, and she could have gone off for a dander with one of the young fellows, or maybe had to go up to the hall for something. I went down to the water and had my paddle, and then I sat down by the rocks and twiddled my toes in the nearest pool to see if I could find a crab, and had a bit of a crack with some of the women folk. And it must have been a right while after that I noticed Paddy Riley with a face on him that would have turned buttermilk. Now, I've always been fond of Paddy, and sure, if things had gone different, I could have been his da, but me and Katie Maguire used to go together before she took up with Mickey Riley. "Oh, he's a dear, Paddy. What's eating you?" I asked him. "Ah, nothing," says Paddy. "You haven't seen Aisling Brennan about, Seamus, have you?" "Listen, Paddy," says I, "you catch yourself on. If you're keening the girl, away you go and find her, and make sure you cut those other boyos out. You'll get nowhere moping and moaning about that way." Well, for some reason, Paddy brightened up a bit at that. "Okay, Seamus," he said, "you're a wise man, and I'll take your advice. I'm away off now to find her and sort things out." There was a look on his face that had me a bit worried, and off he charged across the beach and away up into the sandhills out of sight. Well, he told me afterwards that he had got the idea into his head that it was now or never, and it was high time Aisling Brennan got a bit of sense. She'd been blowing hot and cold on him for weeks past, and he reckoned it was time she let him know where he stood. He'd been half expecting to find her in among the sand dunes with Liam O'Donnell or one of those boys, and he was all set for having it out with her once and for all. But there wasn't hide or hair of her to be seen, or of any fella either. So then he heard a sort of huffing and puffing noise coming from somewhere, and after a while he made out that it seemed to be coming from behind this big thorn bush. Well, round the bush went Paddy, dying to know the ins and outs of whatever might be going on. And when he got to the back of the bush, sure, he could hardly keep from roaring with laughter at the sight. There was Aisling, red in the face, and near enough to bawling her eyes out, and the dress all caught up round her some way, till it was near to choking the life out of her, and so badly tangled in the thorn bush that Aisling couldn't get moving for love or money. "Ah, Aisling, you're a sight for sore eyes," says Paddy, trying to keep his face straight. "Dear save us, girl, what have you been up to?" "Will you come and give me a hand, Paddy Riley, you great lump?" said Aisling, not knowing whether to laugh or cry. "Do you not see I'm all caught up like a tinker's pack?" "Sure, I can see that well enough, Aisling," says Paddy, "but how you managed it is what I don't see." At that, Aisling began to bawl in real earnest. "It was my skirt, Paddy. It was starting to slip down again where I had it hitched up, and I thought I'd just get away quiet-like behind the bushes and fix it up again. But the old thorns kept sticking into me and the belt got caught, and with twisting round to get it out, I got more stuck, and now my good dress is getting all torn, and the mummy'll murder me when she sees it, and I don't know what to do. "Ah, no, Aisling, shut your gob and hold your cauldron and give us a chance to get at you," says Paddy, "and I'll have you out of there in no time." So then he started tugging and hauling at the dress. But sure as goodness, the more he tugged and hauled, the worse stuck it seemed, till in the end Paddy gave it a fierce tug, and there was an almighty ripping noise, and Aisling Brennan let a squeal out of her you'd have heard in Dublin. "Paddy, Paddy, what'll I do? You've ripped my dress, you hellion. How am I to get home now with no clothes on my back?" "No, Aisling," says Paddy, "it's not as bad as all that. It's just a small tear, and sure a blind man on a galloping horse would never notice it." And with that, Aisling went for him, with both fists flying, and Paddy had to grab her by the wrists to save himself, and over they both went into the thorn bushes. It didn't take Paddy long to see that they'd both be best out of there. He had a good hold on Aisling's wrist still, and he was right and quick off the mark, rolling him and Aisling over and away from the thorns before they'd got more than a start made at getting themselves cut to pieces. So there they were, lying all tangled up in the sand. And Paddy says to me, "Seamus," he says, "I don't think I'll ever understand women. For dear to goodness, if Aisling didn't look up at him and start laughing fit to burst." So then, Paddy said, it just seemed like a good idea for him to start kissing her. Well, there's not much more to the story. It was a right while later when the pair of them appeared back down on the beach, and Aisling was well covered up in Paddy's plastic raincoat that he'd brought folded up in his pocket in case it poured. And he told me he'd promised Aisling he'd explain to her mummy that the accident to the dress was all his fault, seeing as how he'd tripped over his own feet and knocked her flying into the thorns. "And if there's a cheep out of her, you just refer her to me," says he to Aisling, as if one word out of old Maggie wouldn't have had him hearing for the next county. But there, Aisling didn't seem to be worried, walking round for the rest of the outing with her hand in Paddy's, and looking like the cat that swallowed the cream. So she must have reckoned she'd come out of the day with a good bargain. And I suppose there's many a one would say she was right. And to end up getting a decent lad like Paddy, it would be worthwhile getting at least one dress ripped off your back.
You've been listening to The Shanachie, Tales of Old Seamus by Jerry McCullough. You can subscribe to this podcast series via iTunes, or you can subscribe or play individual stories at jerrymcculloch.podomatic.com. Jerry now has a full-length novel, Belfast Girls, published on Amazon.com and Kindle. You can also find a podcast of it on iTunes or belfastgirls.podomatic.com. For all this and more information about Jerry and her books, poems, stories and articles, check out her Facebook group or go to her website at jerrymcculloch.com.